Blog Talk Radio.
Out here in the perimeter, there are no stars. Out here, we is stone, the immaculate. Now listen to this, I'll tell you about heartache. I'll tell you about the heartache and the loss of God. I'll tell you about the hopelessness, the meager food from gold for God. I'll tell you about the maiden with wrought iron soul.
Oh, I need to dance.
Participate in the program, 646-478-4847. That's 646-478-4847. Big show. Heal the healer. I can't wait. Oh, I've had such a week. Now, when we last joined you, we were still debating this dopey healthcare bill. And a week later, it's been passed, and there's been a lot of fallout. Let's just say that, you know, up front. Hasn't exactly been, you know, welcomed at certain corners of the culture. And we're going to go over that a little bit because, you know, before we can get to the finer points of this monstrosity that's landed on us here in the last couple of days, we need to kind of like turn the dial a little bit and start looking at the provider side of this equation. Everyone wants access to health care. Now, little stat you might not know, but third leading cause of death in this country is, guess what? Your mainstream health care services. That's right. Third leading cause of death is the American health care system that we just gave 31 million people, or maybe 32. Who knows? What's a million between friends? Access to. So there you go. The allopaths, once again, with the drug companies and the insurance companies in their hip pocket, have just created another coup for themselves. And of course, us woos out here in perimeter with no stars are sucking ass, as it were. And we get nothing like it. And I can't wait to see the wellness visits and all the other things they do, because, you know, they've done it so well to this point. I don't know why we would expect anything different in this country. We have something that doesn't work. That's the third leading cause of death. Let me stress that again. The third leading cause of death in this country is the American healthcare system. That means prescription meds, your basic, you know, run-of-the-mill general practitioner type care. Third leading cause of death. Going to hospital, risk of coming out alive, you know, goes down. So there's a lot going on. And, you know, I just, let's see if I could find this here. This is off of Funny or Die, just to kind of get myself in the mood here. And there's just, like I said, there's only so much I can take of this charade. Hopefully in the next 10 or 15 minutes I'll vent and it'll be over and we can move on to Heal the Healer.
Exclusive.
Here we go.
Michael Oldman.
Little Barack Obama from Funny or Die.
It has been a year since I first proposed health reform in America, and a lifetime for those Americans without health insurance. Yet the blink of an eye for Conan O'Brien, host of The Tonight Show. All right. Now, the House voted, and it passed. It passed like a kidney stone, but it did pass. And I'm going to sign it. So, Boehner, you can suck it. That's right, baby. I'm the President of the United States, and you're not. No matter how tanned you get, you ain't never going to be me. Now, during the fight for health care reform,
that's
Democrats
it.
And Republicans agreed on almost all issues, except for one. Apparently, Republicans want Americans to be sick. I don't know why. Maybe they just, you know, like the mother in The Sixth Sense that keeps poisoning her daughter until she dies. I guess we need a little Macaulay Culkin to, what's that? Haley Joel Osment. We need a little Haley Joel Osment kid. Come around, showing everybody a tape of the Republican legislators putting poison in our soup while we're in bed. I see tanned people. Boehner! Zing! I'm just busting your chops, man. I'm just busting your chops, Boehner. You know what? Don't blow this out of proportion. But, you know, I don't do this all the time. But, hey, if a president ever deserved to smoke a joint, it's me right now. Trust me. Don't worry, it is medicinal, okay? According to PotDoc 420, you know, I got a bad case of anxiety. For a $10 copay, I got this, a pot brownie, and a Dayglow skull sticker from a bong. Too bad. Pretty good for brainstorming sessions, too.
Yeah, that's right.
Probably tackle financial reform next. That is, unless the Republicans want all Americans to be poor as well. Michelle actually grows this organically in the garden. Michelle! Bring some Sun Chips in here. We're going to watch Hot Tub Time Machine, girl. You know I get to watch that jam before anybody else. Thanks a lot, America, and stay healthy.
There you go. Let's see if there's another one here on Funny or Die. I guess I, you know, I'm in that mood. Funny or Die. It's amazing. Here's another one. Another 2 minute little bit here. Get me rolling. Get me in the mood to heal the healer. Because that's what we have to help. All right. It says there's been a lot of misinformation, propaganda, and media research concerning health care reform. Isn't it time you knew the facts? And here they go. Sponsored by Chick-fil-A.
35 seconds ago, we were in a car accident. Pretty sure I got internal bleeding. But I'm just going to walk this one off because I can't afford health insurance.
I can't afford the pill anymore. So now all the guys I'm with have to wear condoms. I don't want to use it, but I will.
A week ago, I found a cyst on my anus. I thought it was hemorrhoids, but it wasn't. I should have gone to a doctor, but instead, I just popped it in my tool shed back there because, well, I don't have insurance.
Last month, I fell off a keg and tore my scrotum off. Thankfully, my frat brothers, T-Bone and Mac Attack, were able to reattach my sack using airplane glue because I didn't have health insurance.
2 weeks from now, I'll take certain liberties with your underage daughter and contract a sexually transmitted disease unexpectedly. I guess I'll just have to hope it goes away.
I took health care into my own hands. Then I had Chick-fil-A for lunch.
Fuck all this shit. I'm going to Chick-fil-A.
I love Chick-fil-A.
It's the fucking best chicken sandwich around.
Self-surgery is painful. But not as painful as when Chick-fil-A is closed on Sundays.
Fuck it, Sunday!
Hey, why is it closed on Sundays?
I'll tell you why Chick-fil-A is closed on Sunday. Because it's fucking God's day.
That's right. I used an old drill bit on my butt.
I got a lot of STDs. I went to college in Baltimore.
Proudly serving Coca-Cola products.
Nancy Pelosi thinks I need health care. Well, she can fuck herself.
Wait a minute, it's a chicken sandwich! Keep your hands off my anus, Obama.
So what, are the Bush twins going to come jack me off or something? I don't know anything about politics.
I could piss out 2, maybe 3 of these STD stops.
Did you know that Chick-fil-A's bathrooms were voted number 2 in cleanliness? Just behind Arby's.
God help me, I just love chicken.
Stop saying we invented the chicken!
The government gave me ass blood.
Hey, screw
None of us have health care.
Healthcare's pussies.
Fuck your health care, America.
Thanks for nothing, Ted Kennedy.
Sign up for free health care and participate in Chick-fil-A's.
See you in the ball pit.
Okay. There's more there in front of your diet. There's a Muppet one. Maybe we'll play that before we go off the air. But I just wanted to set the mood. Again, the number is 646-478-4847. Let's see what the reaction's been to the passing of the bill. Oh, Democratic offices vandalized across the country. Authorities in Wichita and some other cities are investigating vandalism against Democratic offices. On Monday, former Alabama militia leader took credit for instigating the actions. Mike Vandenberg of Pineton, Alabama, former leader of the Alabama Constitutional Militia, put out a call on Friday for the Sons of Liberty to break the windows of Democratic Party offices nationwide in opposition to health care reform. Since then, vandals have struck several offices, including the Sedgwick County Democratic Party headquarters in Wichita. There's glass everywhere, is what the statement was. The brick took out the whole floor to ceiling window and put a gouge in my desk, Lindsay Stubble said. She's the director of that particular venue. The brick was hurled at the window between Friday night and Saturday morning, had some anti-Obama rhetoric written on it. Well, good to see that the militia guys had time to write that on the brick. Vandals also smashed the front door of Gabrielle Giffords' office in Tucson. Arizona Democrat voted for the package. Over the weekend, a brick shattered glass doors in Monroe County Democratic offices in Rochester, New York. Attached to the brick was a note. Well, they attached the note, didn't write on the brick. And it said, "Extremism in defense of liberty is no vice." A quote from Barry Goldwater's 1964 acceptance speech as the Republican presidential candidate. Curious to that one. They've now gotten into the 20th century with the quotes, because again we were quoting Thomas Jefferson for a while. So there you are. Extremism in defense of liberty is no vice. And on Friday, a brick broke the window at Louis Slaughter's office in Niagara Falls, a vocal supporter of health care reform. Tyler Longpin called the incidents troubling. It's an alarming context. We haven't had any trouble here, but fortunately, we're on the seventh floor here in Topeka. Bring it, baby! Most of our county offices are storefronts, a little more vulnerable to intimidation. Vandenberg posted a call on Friday on his blog, Sispy Street Irregulars, referring to the health care reform bill as Nancy Pelosi's intolerable act. He sent the following message out. We can break their windows. Break them now, and if we do a proper job, we can break hundreds of thousands of windows across the country. You might just wake them up to defending ourselves at the muzzle of a rifle. We might just wake up enough of them to make defending ourselves at the muzzle of a rifle unnecessary. So the breaking of the windows is a mild intervention. He told the Kansas City Star the action was meant to get everyone's attention. What I was trying to get across is that people didn't understand how on the edge of civil conflict this country is. Well, of course, if he's throwing windows, breaking windows, he's kind of the guy at the edge. Those who monitor right-wing extremist groups said they weren't surprised. Passage of health care reform elicited a variety of responses from its opponents, from the author of the book Blood and Politics, Leonard Zeskind. We can expect militia types like Vandenberg to become even more far-fetched and violent. There you go. There's one reaction to health care. Love it. Love it. I don't know what to tell you. You know, I'm just here reporting what happened, okay? Now, two more takes on this before we get into some other stuff, because there's so many other things to get into. Because for our guest at the bottom of the hour, Fred Schurger, chiropractor at large, will be joining us to discuss his angle on this and also get into some behind the scenes of what it's like to be a healthcare provider in the 21st century. Then at the top of the hour, we're going to have Catherine Marion joining us all the way from Vancouver, the Canuck with a luck. She'll be joining us and discussing a lot of things she's doing at supernaturalwoman.com. And believe me, you don't want to miss that. Top of the hour, 10 o'clock. Anyway, getting back to this, let's get some facts. Dun, 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 dun. I need some music here because after what happened on Sunday, Batman.
You filthy criminal.
They're still meeting. I'm going to switch over to C-SPAN as I'm doing this here. They're meeting on the Senate now, trying to figure out this reconciliation package, and they're finding all kinds of things wrong with it. So I'm not sure. So Someone from the GoDaddy group is speaking now on C-SPAN for some reason. Executive Vice President.
Oh, I guess so.
All right. Guess they're not showing it live. But they are meeting, trying to figure this thing out. So let's see. This is from the DailyComet.com. Fact check. Who's spinning new health care laws? All right. The tumultuous health care debate has brought you death panels and socialism, has spun off a catalog of myths that keeps growing as Obama and all the sides battle towards midterm elections this fall. We're basically in that mode now. It's the silly season. As the White House signing ceremony Tuesday, Obama ventured the hope that Americans on all sides will judge legislation what it actually says and does. When I sign this bill, he declared, all the overheated rhetoric over reform will finally confront the reality of reform. Wishful thinking, the article says. Facts are stubborn, but myths about legislation are likely to persist, and a lot of people don't agree on which is which. All right, so let's take a look at some of these myths. Obama has put the nation on a slippery slope towards socialism. Big myth. Hello, government's role in healthcare has been steadily growing since Medicare and Medicaid were established 45 years ago. Even if Republicans were to take control of Washington and repeal the bill, government would still be on track to pick up more than half of the nation's healthcare tab by 2012, according to a report last month from Medicare. The Republican myth is that the government is for the first time going to take over the healthcare sector. This is from Joe Antos, an economist at the American Enterprise Institute. The takeover was largely accomplished in 1965 with the creation of Medicare and Medicaid. Since the early days, Medicare has called the shots on a lot of policy issues that private insurance fell in line with. Still, the new law will undoubtedly expand the government's influence. Senator Judd Gregg warned Tuesday this will lead us to the quasi-nationalization of the health industry. Underline quasi, the article says. Democrats dropped their idea of a government insurance plan to compete with private carriers, so any socialization will be channeled through WellPoint, UnitedHealthcare, and other private insurance giants who are absolutely having a party right now. It's a party. Meanwhile, Obama says that once the new competitive insurance markets open for business in 2014, individuals buying coverage comparable to what they have now will pay 14 to 20% less. Family coverage costs about $13,400 a year, so that could be real money. But the president's assurance is based on a selective reading of a Congressional Budget Office report that found most individuals would probably buy better, more expensive coverage than what's available now. Obama skips over this important caveat. The budget office didn't say premiums would be lower than currently. He said the premiums for some people will be lower. Premiums for others will be higher. With the U.S. population getting older and medical science pushing the technology envelope, there's very little reason that premiums will go down. The best Obama will go for is that the pace of this will slow down. Here's another myth. You'll be forced to pay for other people's abortions only if you join the health care plan that covers abortion. In that case, the cost of paying for abortions will spread over the enrollees in the plan. Tim Lee Just, law professor at Washington Lee University, said people who don't want to pay for abortions pick a plan that doesn't offer it. There will be definitely a demand for such plans. All right? So the abortion issue, it's going to come back to haunt them. The Democratic bill will lead to government healthcare rationing. The legislation sets up research centers to compare the effectiveness of medical treatments, and critics fear the bureaucrats will start issuing justifications for denying patients across access to medical technology. Republicans as well as Democrats previously called for a major investment in such research to make sense of what kind of treatments, medications, and technologies are worth the cost. The legislation specifies that the research findings cannot be used to impose mandates, guidelines, recommendations, or to use to deny coverage. Acceptance of the research likely to be slow in coming, the medical community, not the government, will take a lead in vetting it. There's that myth. All right? Let's see, another one. The American people have already rejected Obamacare. Although some polls show a majority oppose, some surveys find the public evenly divided. Obama reads those findings to mean Democrats have a chance to turn around the public opinion. He's embarking on a campaign to sell the bill. He's going to be in Iowa tomorrow, stumping around. The legislation will save Medicare from bankruptcy. Another myth. Democrats say the bill, even as it cuts Medicare to pay for expanded coverage for working families, will add at least 9 years of sovereignty to the program, now projected to be exhausted in 2017. Oh, Technically, that's true, but only on paper. Savings from the Medicare cuts will be invested in the government IOUs like any other trust fund. Special Treasury securities count on an asset of Medicare's books, making the program's precarious financial situation even seems more reassuring. But the government will spend the actual money. And when the time comes for Medicare to redeem those IOUs, the lawmakers will scramble to go for the cash. The key point is that Medicare savings will be received by government only once. And the budget official says, since they can't be set aside for future Medicare spending or pay for the current spending or other programs, well, that kind of leaves us up a tree. I have one more article here, but I'm going to put it down for a second because, he was there and he's gone. We had a caller and he disappeared. So I will go back to this article and see if he calls back. Now, we just heard what the facts and fiction are. Now let's go out to Silicon Valley. And if our caller is there, he calls back, I'll get him on the air. He only had to wait a minute. The world is very impatient these days. Healthcare reform is a cloud. An interview with Matthew Holt and Richard McManus. If you don't know who they are, well, they run something called Healthcare 2.0, which is something I'm really interested in. And their blog is thehealthcareblog.com or health2con.com. All right? And basically what these guys are looking at is, our caller's back. We'll have to shelve that for a moment. And you're on Summertime. I think I know who this is. Go ahead.
Yeah, Mark, it's, you know me. I mean,
yes,
you know,
yes,
the unnamed
caller with from New York.
That, you know, one of those, you say Tom, it's like, I just don't tell him. I mean, if you want to give him, you know, where I work and give him the phone number, my social security number.
Yeah, well, why not? You know,
what the heck? You know, I mean, we're all friends and whatnot. This whole thing on Sunday wasn't the best thing in the world. I agree. But did you sit back? Did you sit back and watch the debate? I did. I watched it for, like, you know, of course, you know me, sifter of gin, you know, hanging out, making a good meal and whatnot and watching it. And, of course, the next morning I woke up with gout on my right foot to the point where I was actually, you know, popping all sorts of pills and whatnot, which, of course, is going to kill me. And you know it yourself. But it brings me back to a point. You know, I was I'm a registered Republican.
Uh-huh.
And when I was a kid, you know, we're the same age. When we grew up in that Reagan time period, you know, I was 18 years old. I was a canvasser for the Reagans, for the Reagan Republican, re-election in 84. And all the local politicians, I got spat at by lesbians and white planes when I was canvassing. It didn't matter. I believed in what I believed in. What I believed in was that we should end Social Security. We should end unemployment benefits. They should do away with the minimum wage, and all this other stuff. It's like it brings me back to a friend of mine who was a priest. Father Paul, I tell you about that all the time. You know, he's a good guy. And he didn't realize, he knew I was a conservative. I used to bloviate to him. He used to laugh about it and used to give me, like, these little snippets out of cartoon magazines about one was, this house is protected by a right-wing fanatic, you know, and stuff like that. The fact of the matter is he said to me, I was telling him how we should get rid of minimum wage. He finally stopped me in my tracks. He said, no. He goes, it gave me a raise because he was I found out later on he was a New Dealer. And he said, he goes, they fought tooth and nail for almost 2 years on that policy during the Roosevelt administration not to provide minimum wage because they said you'd lose your jobs. And he got, of course it came through. And I said, so what did you think after? I thought he would be like conservative because I thought he was a Republican because anybody who was a priest had to be Republican because of the abortion issue. But I found out differently later on. He said, I thought those bastards, they could have paid me this. I had to start smoking cigarettes to take a break. And that's a real story. No ifs, ands, or buts about it. And I'll say this about this bill. They said the same thing about Social Security, that's never going to work, and they still try to lie to us. It's never going to work. It's working. They said that about Medicare. It's that side of the aisle we have to point our guns at. Not guns, but, I mean, you know, our
why not point our guns?
No, because, well, I mean, I
King Kong ain't got shit on me!
That's it.
No,
bring
no,
it.
No. I, you know what I'm saying?
April 19th, man.
Bottom line.
The March on the Potomac with the guns.
Bottom,
here they come.
The March, what, the Potomac?
They're marching on the Potomac. I was just reading about it.
You want to talk about what, the Army of the Potomac underneath George B.
McFarland? Oh, no, the Potomac River, there's going to be a demonstration of the open gun stuff.
Well, I mean, I don't believe, I don't disagree with having somebody having it. I want to own a flintlock musket because I really do love the Civil War. I love reading
all
about
right.
the Civil War. And when the fact of the matter is that in this nation right now, we have a Southern delegation that are Confederates. That's
uh-huh.
a fact. There's no you don't agree with that? They're trying to hold, like I said to you, Joe Wilson.
Well, there's a big seceding movement going on
well,
now. That's the other alternative.
Like
secession.
I said.
Can't say it.
The fact of the matter, the real truth is that the Medicare worked, Social Security works, minimum wage works. This thing, it might not be the best thing. We need universal health care, and of course, this is not even a health care bill. And you know, it's supposed
I,
to be a,
I, yeah,
it's a regulatory
I,
bill towards the bloviatingly low life used prophylactics nosed. As the health insurers that we know that actually raise your – I mean, today I found out my car insurance went up because of this $20 a month. What the hell is that about? I never had an accident friggin' – but, you know, it's like the insurers are ridiculous. Lincoln said it best. I have the whole Southern Army in front of me, and I have the banks behind me. I don't know which one to fire – to aim the flintlock muskets at first. I mean, that's a small way of saying it. It's the truth. But there is a. If you watch that debate on Sunday, that was absolutely the jeers and the nastiness. They're like children. They're like children that are in the backseat of the station wagon that can't get their way. Because you know why? If this bill, even if it helps just 100,000 people, just a small amount, that means that those 100, just like Social Security and Medicare and minimum wage, they can't get it back. Because they'll be fired. That's the reality. Once the people get a little something, they're not going to give it up. That's why the Republicans lost the House of Representatives in scores in 2006 because of it wasn't anything about the war in Iraq, believe it or not, because people are too stupid to actually think that wasn't wrong. It was about the whole idea that he went after Social Security. That happened, if you remember that, in 2005.
I remember that. He abandoned it because the people went crazy, yeah.
Yeah, exactly. And that's why they lost the House of Representatives, and that's the reason why I believe firmly that they lost everything else. And I talked to an old lady that we deliver just a few quarts of milk to every week, and she called up on the other day for a dozen eggs. And she said, I can't believe – and she's like an old Roosevelt person. She's like 90 years old. She goes, these people are unbelievable. She's telling me – she's like speaking in that tone of voice that had so many years ago. Oh, they're so disgusting, disgraceful, how they would do such a thing. And I'm like, okay. It's like, you know, and she was like very aggravated. And basically, she calls up to get a dozen eggs so she could talk to somebody. But that's the reality of the situation. They don't want anybody to have something. That's it.
Well, now we'll see what happens next. I put C-SPAN on there. I thought they were still fighting about this, the reconciliation stuff, but they got some replay on, so I don't know what they're doing right now. But there's supposed to be meeting around the clock on this thing. And
I just want to say,
you know,
I'm
it's
sorry.
Going to be a slam dunk, and we're going to have to live
with it. I just want to say one thing about you.
What?
And it's seriously. Your health viewpoint is absolutely correct. People have to understand, we have to get off the antibiotics. And, of course, me with the pains and everything else and the arthritis, I got to get off all the painkillers and all the stupid nonsense. We have to start, you know, all that stuff. The holistic way is the only way to go. And, of course, movement, breathing, stand up straight, walking with the ear lobe, you know, basically straight down to the ball of the foot.
Oh,
it's important. That's important.
Well, I think they're fundamental, but we have to, you know, let that seep through the nervous system of the country.
Well,
so.
That's
Tom. I got a guest sitting here waiting for us here, but thanks for sharing, and you're welcome anytime, as you know.
Gendane. Take care.
All right, I'll take that one as an inside joke.
That means 100 years for you and your family. Come on.
I know, yeah, I know what it means.
Then you're aggravated by that? Okay.
Travel light, you bop. Goodbye.
Take care. Bye-bye.
All right, joining us now, we get the buzzer. Hey, wait a minute. Whoa. Come on up here. Where is it? Submarine, please. All right. After some behind-the-curtains, you know, maneuvering, we finally get to speak. This is Dr. Fred Trigger from what part of Illinois are you from? Or Ohio? I forgot. Where are you from?
Springfield, Illinois, Dan. Pretty much just about an hour east of St. Louis, depending upon how the crow flies.
Okay. Well, you know, we wanted to get you on before the vote, But now we're on after the vote. I don't know if anything's really changed because we're still quacks. I mean, it's like...
Well, and we still don't know what the hell this is. This legislation means. It means that, you know, people are going to get covered. We sort of knew that was going to happen anyway.
Uh-huh.
Whether or not the coverage is worth anything is still a question. And the worst part is Congress has, again, voted themselves not to be covered by whatever they cover us with. So
yeah, I saw that. I heard that. I don't know where I was driving this afternoon. That they put themselves in it as an exemption. So that, does that mean they get something different? I mean, I couldn't find it anywhere on the web before the show. That it was one of those little facts that kind of fell below the threshold of, you know, of the media there. That these legislatures, who, as Tom was just saying, were fighting tooth and nail like some bad frat party on Sunday, did it all lay on us, and they're not in the same boat as us.
No, and this is sort of the, you know, I start hearing these little bits and pieces, and I'm like, wow, we are either on the verge of another revolution, and I'll be honest, I'm not a big history buff, but I do remember the reason for the last revolution was taxation without representation.
Uh-huh.
This is close.
Well, if you were with me at the top of the show, I mean, they're throwing chairs through the rocks through the windows and. In the Democratic offices, and, you know, Sunday there was, you know, practically a riot going on down there when they were spitting on people. And, you know, the country is, you know, for lack of a better word, confused. And they're also oppressed, and they're also addicted to over-the-counter medications and the primary service. Like I was just saying, if you know this is to be true as a fact, and probably every chiropractor that's worth his salt knows this little factoid, American healthcare, mainstream, allopathic, over-the-counter, right in the middle of the bell curve, healthcare, third leading cause of death. Just that's their job. They get up in the morning, and they go to work, and people die. So if they're medicating us, vaccinating us, intervening on all kinds of fronts, and the body count keeps going up, let's let 32, I think it's 32 million, more people into the tent to get access to this wonderful service we have here. That's a big-time killer because of the fact that it creates codependency on Big Pharma, and the insurance company just sits there and just basically just like an ATM card, just swipes right through us. So I've been in practice 19 years. I think 18 and a half of them I haven't accepted any kind of third-party type of pay for what I do, which, you know, if you've been a chiropractor for 5 minutes, you know, and walk 5 minutes in my shoes, and you understand me, you get the sensation of that you're pulling people out of a river. You know, that they keep coming down the river, you keep pulling them out. And then you realize, like I did about 10 years ago, that the people themselves were throwing themselves in the river, you know, with their lifestyle and their choices and the fact that they've been socially conditioned to react to symptoms and not understand their body and not understand anything about their health. And so this whole idea I kept saying last week, where's the care? I see a lot of health talk. And I see a lot of insurance reform. I see a lot of money moving around. But the practitioners, and I was down at a conference last weekend, I'll talk to you about it in a minute, the practitioners are saying, well, who's going to provide all this care? Now, we always say in chiropractic, well, we should be, you know, access. We back in, I don't know if you practiced long enough to go back to the first time through with Hillary, when we actually trotted down a bunch of guys from the ACA to convince Hillary to let us in and be gatekeepers. I remember that. Sitting up at 2 o'clock in the morning watching this guy fumble around with his papers, and Hillary looks up from her desk, and she has her glasses down by her nose, and she says, it says here that the chiropractors are serve one-seventh of the healthcare sector, 7% of the population, some stat like that. So you can't be gatekeepers. You hardly see anybody here. And it was like that was it. We were dismissed. And, you know, now I don't even think we're even organized enough to be included in that kind of thing. So from your standpoint, middle of the country out there, when you hear people talking about it in your office, are you someone that takes insurance, or are you someone that's involved in the healthcare system as it is, and what's your battle plan going forward?
Well, you know, I am taking insurance. I'm the seat of the government for Illinois. So
okay.
I get a lot of people who are working for the government. Illinois is in a lot of trouble financially right now, and it's nice when they finally do pay those bills. But you know, I've got people who don't have insurance too, and make sure that they can afford care. I've gone out of my way to make sure that there are avenues that they can approach. What I'm finding interesting, and I think this is sort of one of those lifestyle choices that has unfortunately been made by the middle class, they've gotten complacent. I had maybe it was upper middle class couple that came in with their son for care about a year ago. They did have some insurance. I tend to run out of network so I don't have to play with all of the garbage that is ensues with insurance, but still, you know, enough. I want to say that their insurance covered a little bit, but not a lot. You know, we're starting to see higher deductibles day in, day out, and for the care that I can provide to get sick people well, it's not going to hit the deductible. It just doesn't. So, you know, oftentimes, my plan is cash. You know, it might be a couple grand, for the entire year. But, you know, compared to what insurance costs, you know, sometimes that's a better deal. But anyways, they were referred in by another patient who, you know, has been just a great patient, really ecstatic about the care that I provided him. And they disappeared after a couple visits. And I was just joking with him a couple months later about, you know, him sending in another patient, you know, sending in, you know, referring someone else. And his comment was back to me, well, you know, I tried to. This guy worked for him. I tried to, but, you know, these people who, they're my employees, in some regards, it's a small engineering firm, he wants to have these people step up and take over, but they're the ones who have maxed themselves out, buying all of the toys, not putting money away for a rainy day to save, because I think the middle class, and I'll be honest, when I was working in engineering in the late 90s, it was, you know, crazy, because you had money coming in and you had no idea what to do with it. And no one was talking about saving money. No one was talking about, you know, the rainy day, because, heck, you know, that was the big boom for the net. So people were making money hand over fist. And I think too many people got into the credit crunch, which is what we're obviously dealing with now, that they never put the money away to take care of their health for a rainy day. Now, granted, you know, I feel that, you know, at that point in time, even I was starting to look towards health care, changing my health attitudes. I'd gotten off medicine. I've just been in practice 3 years now, and 2002 was when I went back to chiropractic school. 2000 was when I made the transition, or decided that I was going to make the transition out of engineering into chiropractic. But even before that, 4 years before that, I decided I'm going to lose whatever it needs to be. I was sitting about 240 at the time, and I got myself down to a trim probably 180.
Wow.
So, you know, and gained it back on after job situations changed to the better, just more hours. So, you know, I'm making all this money, but I don't even have time to spend it, which was sort of nice. But then, you know, you buy a house. I'm living up in Detroit. Housing market's really expensive. So, you know, you make these choices, and I've personally gone through a lot of them, where you make financial choices that looked good at the time, and maybe in a long-term situation where the situation was going to remain constant, would have been fine. But we have economy dips in 2000. It was looking really good and starting to turn around when 9/11 hit. And, you know, I was already on my way to change where I was going, but I think too many people have gotten into that situation, and now they're looking for the handout. Personally, I thought it was asinine when Bush gave out, what was it, that $300 check? He's like, here, have $100 back, because that's going to make a huge difference in stimulus in your bills. And I'm like, yeah, I'm going to pay off a credit card, or I'm going to throw $300 towards a credit card that, you know, I've got to pay off. You know, in the end, before I went off to school, I was free and clear of debt. I was happy about that. Starting up a practice, another story, but that's the...
Well, hey, you're way better off than I am, because I, like I said, I went cash way in the beginning, and in the teeth of the early stages of what became managed care,
I was around for the whole Mercy document in chiropractic, which was another glorious moment. I actually chucked that thing across the street, and it skidded across Boston Post Road and went right in the sewer. It was a great shot. Threw that sucker about 50 feet and went right across the street. It was great. So I've always been someone who's you know, sort of defied the powers that be in terms of the way that they understand things, because as I realized really on in practice, the regulators have absolutely nothing about what I'm doing. They weren't trained like me, so therefore they don't get to judge me. So unless it's going to be a panel of my teachers from Palmer determining what I do with a client, you don't get to talk to me. And the clients have known that forever. So it does cause, you know, some people to get short arms when they come in the office and they realize, you know, but the thing is that they'll join a gym and they won't go to the gym. They'll buy, you know, some exercise equipment and they won't use it at home. Not a lot of people are proactive about their health until they're really sick. You know, and that's why I understand that we got to get out of the whole health disease argument, because it's not our argument. We're vitalists. We're not fatalists. Fatalists do prevention because what's inevitable is disease in that model. Oh, you better get your colonoscopy. You better get your heart exam. You better get your breast irradiated. All of that is under the mindset that body's stupid. It breaks down and gets sick and gets disease and die. We better be, you know, so it, that whole model just doesn't sell. We never did. Same thing with vaccines.
And I'll tell you,
I got in a lot of trouble with the whole swine flu. I don't know how scared or how what your community was like. People out here were just basically sitting there with, you know, kind of shrugging their shoulders. They didn't know what to believe
when
came out in the fall.
When I had with the swine flu, I just told everyone, you know, because I've been a big proponent. In fact, I get whatever you want to call that seasonal allergy thing, or seasonal affective disorder, where you're feeling blah all the time. In the Midwest, we have, you know, we're lucky to see sun once in the winter. And, you know, personally, I like the sun. And we need the sun for vitamin D synthesis. So that was my big thing. It's like, everyone gets vitamin D, and I've got something better than cod liver oil, which I take personally.
Biggest antivirus is sunlight, it's, you know, as far as that goes. Like I said, there's just a lot of very lazy doctoring going on out there, because if you gave them the simple low-cost or no-cost strategies to deal with a lot of the stress that they're under, just had Tom on here. He's been with me for a long time. You just know better, and you don't do those things anymore. Those behaviors don't boot up with you, and you don't run for the flu shot. You don't run for everything these hoops that they set us up to jump through, because, you know, you end up with a commercial like this. I don't know if you've heard this. I love playing this Lunesta commercial here. Is it? Yeah, let's see. These are the side effects. In the middle of a 90-second commercial, this is what you get.
Lunesta helps you fall asleep quickly, so take it right before bed. Be sure you have at least 8 hours to devote to sleep before becoming active. Until you know how you'll react to Lunesta, you should not drive or operate machinery. Do not take Lunesta with alcohol. Call your doctor right away if after taking Lunesta you walk, drive, eat, or engage in other activities while asleep. In rare cases, severe allergic reactions can occur. Most sleep medicines carry some risk of dependency. Side effects may include unpleasant taste, headaches, drowsiness, and dizziness. Why wait another night? Ask your doctor how a Lunesta night's sleep can help you wake this refreshed. Lunesta, a great tomorrow starts tonight.
There you go.
Funniest thing about that drug, I saw something recently out there that actually comes out and says Lunestra, on average, gets people to sleep 5 minutes faster.
There you go.
That's it. You know what the best way to get to sleep faster if you can't get to sleep? Turn the damn TV off at least 2 hours before you want to go to bed, and that includes the computers. Read a book or something. We need to get away from these electromagnetic things that are just messing with our head. But you're right. Now, that's implying that you're broken. And I heard the best comment this morning from I had my BNI meeting this morning, and I actually ended up speaking at this group. It's a networking group, for those who aren't familiar with it, of different businesses throughout the community. And within my community, we're in agricultural land, I actually have probably the best crop doctor in the country associated with it. And we talk about foods. In fact, I'm having him come in to do soil analysis for my garden so that I can have actually good foods throughout the year. But he and I made the comment that we are completely compostable beings, that within 3 days, with nothing interfering, with the body's own ability to break us down, we would be nothing. And
okay.
That's pretty profound right there, that there's obviously something that's keeping us around day after day after day. Some people up to 70, 80 plus years. Some people say that we can get up to 150 plus and not be decrepit. I'm talking vital, vibrant, and alive type 150. You know, that there's some life force, some vital life force, obviously, that people are starting to see now that is keeping us going. And this is exactly what, you know, the chiropractic philosophy gets around into. This, you know, and there are people who are flocking to this now, recognizing it. And like you said, there are so many people out there who just, you know, they're still caught up in, we're obviously broken, I need something to fix me.
Well, and again, that's why this whole access issue has been such an important thing with the healthcare debate, is because people figure that they're helpless without the access to the drugs and the interventions, and they feel shut out. It's almost like, you know, it's the whole concept of being cured of anything. I mean, that's another thing. That's why chiropractic, if it really had the cojones it's supposed to have, and it doesn't. I have to tell you right now, I've sat in rooms with every one of these so-called leaders in the profession. Push comes to shove, they are capitalists like any other profession, and they basically have made a cottage industry on selling a lot of backswing without a lot of follow-through. And I've been nose-to-nose with guys like Orrin Hatch, barging in on our meetings and things like that. And the thing is that when you say you're a vitalist, that to them, that's fighting words. It means you're a wackadoo, and you're not going to go along with vaccines, and you're not going to go along with prophylactic antibiotics, and you're not going to go along with all the other interventions from, you know, whether it's neurobehavioral medicine or whether it's dealing with painkillers, all that stuff. So you're not going to be part of their little economic, you know, boon there. And because of that, we don't count. And we that's what I was told once at a conference, was D.C. means doesn't count. And my friend said D.C. means doesn't care. You know, because it's like my whole role in someone's life is to get them to not rely on you, to not depend on you for anything to do with health, and to focus on their vitality, which you can have at any age. And that's what's missing in the profession. There's no voice for that. We speak and we kind of pantomime the wellness stuff, but when it comes to actually organizing and getting something through, we're slow to the table, because it means giving up a lot of the turf that we think we won back in the 80s with the insurance industry back then. And that's what, you know, and now that we're not even in their thoughts, let alone their memories, you know, we need to just say, okay, we're now not part of the system, so you don't get to manage us, you don't get to judge us, you don't get to regulate us, you don't get nothing. You get to just basically operate with us in the free market and see who gets what done. If we got paid for outcomes, like the Mayo Clinic and Cleveland Clinic and some of these other clinics, if chiropractic profession got paid for outcomes, as down on the profession as I am as a whole, I think we would compete fairly well with these guys.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah. Well, and I think what's interesting, and I'll tell you what, I'm so proud to be part of this organization and to have been with this group for so long. I'm a member. I'm a franchise owner of one of the Upper Cervical Health Centers of America practices in the U.S. But we have gone international, and I think this is what's going to make us really big. I'm really convinced, and I have no proof of this, that this is what was the case, but one of our founders, Ray Drury, who's based out of Charlotte, North Carolina, he's got a couple of offices over there, but he's basically got this vision to get upper cervical care to the world. And for those who aren't familiar with upper cervical chiropractic, we deal with the first two bones in the neck, relieve pressure from the brainstem, and don't worry about the symptoms. And that's, you know, out, you know, as things go, that's pretty out there. I mean, that's totally the vitalistic concept. But what happened, Ray's got family in Italy, and he happened to help out some people from Italy. They had about a dozen, maybe more, people come over for 3 months of care. They paid for it out of pocket. They had to set themselves up. They had to quit their jobs to come over because, you know, they were bringing their friends and family over. And they saw the results. This little girl who had had vaccine damage was able to start walking. And we saw a video of her where she was doing very well. And the next thing you know, she's unable to play with, you know, the little kitty toy she's got there. What was the other? Another gal, I can't remember the name of the disease that she was diagnosed with, that her medical doctors – in Italy couldn't figure out. And it'll come to me maybe later. But the point is, you know, Ray, you know, just hearing it from the side says, oh, yeah, I learned about that, you know, at Logan School of Medicine. He's like, well, that's probably this. This gal comes over, gets adjusted, and sure enough, she's able to start bringing, she's able to open up her hands. She's basically gone completely in complete flexion, and everything was rigid. And like I said, I can't remember what that diagnosis was. Mm-hmm. Number of other people came over, fantastic results. And almost a month after this happened, because apparently some of these people were highly connected up into the Italian government and honestly to the Pope, this was when Italy passed legislation for chiropractic. So it's interesting that it happened at the same time. And I'm like, this is way too much of a coincidence that these two things didn't happen on some level together. What I'm even more excited about is we have medical doctors over there who are listening to upper cervical doctors talking about how correcting this problem in the upper cervical spine, getting pressure off the brainstem, is starting to help the body heal. And we're explaining it through the neurological processes as we understand them. And just seeing how the normal reaction, normal function starts to come back. There's a doctor over there who they've actually compared to BJ, the way he doesn't sleep. He's written, I want to say, an opera or something like that. The guy is just a modern-day Renaissance man.
Sleeping qualifies, I'm right next to him.
Right, exactly. But he wants to do research.
Don Lunestra here.
Yeah, he wants to do research. He wants to be the first MD to do research on upper cervical care and multiple sclerosis. And Ray's response when he was asked if he can do that, Ray was like, okay, if you want to. This, they have accepted this so much over there because they're not caught up in the same. Maybe it is some of the insurance stuff that we're caught up with over here because we don't have system in place.
The quest 15 years ago when JVSR and all those meetings first started was efficacy for care. And that to justify your existence basically was the race. And
right.
I'm beyond all that. To prove what we're doing helps people from the standpoint of prevention or amelioration of symptoms or diseases or syndromes is boring to me because it comes down to the fact that all you're doing is supporting the natural ability of the body to heal itself, which is recuperative power. If we did research on what recuperative power was, sign me up. I'll roll up my sleeves. I'll be there at 7 o'clock tomorrow morning, but no one in chiropractic, philosophically, scientifically, theoretically, technique-wise, politically can explain, it's in every state, recuperative power, can explain what recuperative power is to me. And until and unless we do that, we don't have a research design that's truly our own.
This is
true.
We're always
copying somebody else's research design, whether it be biomechanical or whether it be physiological or whether it be neurodevelopmental, whatever it is. But recuperative power is something that we talk about, give lip service to, and don't research because you know what? They don't want to give us the money to do that because that would be spooky scary, and that would get into the fact that maybe our body is a hologram and, oh, my God, we're all going down the hill here. And we got to reach for this purple pill here. Let me get this purple pill out.
Go ask your doctor if the purple pill is right for you. They don't have the foggiest idea what a purple pill is for. They just think, you know, with all these scenes of trees and green grass and convertible cars and pillow clouds in the sky, if life is like that when you're on the purple pill, give me some purple pills. I mean, that's what this advertising is all about.
There you go.
And you're right. You're right. We need to have... I never said it was vitalistic research. I never said it was chiropractic research. It is the research that will start opening people's eyes that there's something better. And that's, you know, it's a stepping stone in the right direction. Yeah, I've been looking for, you know, I'm a big technology guy. You know, went to Rose Holman Institute of Technology back in 92. I've been playing with, you know, someone said I'm a power user because I know how to use multiple different operating systems, and maybe I am. Running a Mac with a PC with another PC and who knows what else stuff I've got in my office. I want to figure out how do we measure that life force? How do you measure health? We can measure pain. We can measure sickness. What's our measure of health?
Well, that's a layup for me. I can answer the question. Do you have an answer for us? Go ahead.
I don't.
Oh, okay, I do. Okay. There was a book called Measuring Health. I'm actually looking, craning my neck, probably throwing my atlas out, looking for it on the shelf over there.
research book Ralph Boone directed me to a long time ago in the galaxy far, far away before there was really an internet. And basically, coherence. We are constantly looking for what's wrong in the system instead of what the system's supposed to function on, and that is coherence. And coherence has a zillion different ways of being assessed, both on the qualitative side and on the quantitative side. I happen to use heart rate variability as my marker because it's a physiological window into the entire system, because the heart is, as a biological oscillator, is about 60% more juice flowing through it than the brain. So, you know, that's another heresy in chiropractic. You're looking at the heart, you know. Yeah, the heart has a whole, you know, neurology to it. It's called neurocardiology, that's separate from your central nervous system and actually lives in, to regulate with it. So there's a whole bunch of missing stuff. It's like, you know, when I went to my kids' eighth grade class and look at their biology book, and they're still teaching them the same garbage they were teaching them, you know, 15, 20 years ago. We've had all this, basically 15 years of research in neurobiology and the way the brain develops. It's not in there.
Yeah.
So that's, we just have a design problem, and we also have a voice problem. And we're afraid because of the fact that we're coming from the outside that we have to kind of reform this system. I think let the system crash and set up something that runs completely parallel and independent to it. That's a health education system. That's gonna focus on vitality and salutogenesis, which is the origin of well-being, rather than pathogenesis, which is the origin of disease. And then we can skate, man. We don't have to worry about diagnosing all this stuff and proving that we help MS. And we're here basically as advocates for your vitality and your longevity. And we have a strategy to get you there. If you're under regular care, your nervous system is going to have to pass a driving test every couple of weeks. And it's not about getting adjusted either. It's about getting checked.
Exactly.
We don't even focus on that. The guys in the 50s, you'd drive all day to get you know, one of BJ's disciples to run the neurokilometer up your back, and if you weren't in pattern, man, they didn't touch you. They sent your ass home.
And now
you got to adjust them. Otherwise, what the heck are they doing there? They think, well, if this is, you're getting checked. See what you need.
Yeah, and for me, I'm Titron 100%. I scan everyone. I had a gal who's not been able to sleep. She's had horrible problems lately. And she's been seeing me for a couple of years. And some days I need to adjust her, and she's, you know, every time she comes in, and she's just doing great now as far as her scan, but she feels miserable. And I'm like, I'm not touching you because your body doesn't need it. And she'll be back in another week when, you know, she says, Doc, it still hurts. I'm like, let's see what's going on. And if she's out, I'm going to do something. But
That's a skill. The skill of knowing when not to adjust and when to adjust is a lost art in the profession, and I commend you on actually employing it and using it in practice and having the guts to tell your client who came there, drove there, found a place to park, sat in the waiting room, got on your table, got checked, and you went, you know what, you're doing good. You don't need to rely on me. You rely on your own natural ability to heal, and I'm here to basically assess and monitor that, and if I see the system is not operating up to snuff, I know how to support that. As your doctor, that's the relationship. That's the deal you shake hands with them on. Not come in here and lay on the table and let me poke and prod you and hope I find something that I can, you know, dig my fingers into, and then you just sit there passively like a lump of meat that has an ATM card. That's not healthcare. You know, that's not even close to it. That's not even remedial healthcare. So,
honestly,
you know,
if MDs would do that with their own patients, when someone comes in and says, you know, oh, the kids have ear infections. Yeah, but those antibiotics don't do a damn bit of good. You know, let's give it 3 or 4 days because it's going to go away in 3 to 4 days, whether you do
right.
Something or not. Then, you know, maybe guys having some respect for them, but they're playing so much CYA right now.
Well, they do it a lot because of their practice act. They have to offer, you know, vaccines, otherwise they're guilty of malpractice. They have to do certain tests because it's mandated by their state. So the MDs are the actual docs. No better, because you've asked them, what do you do with your kids? They don't even try that stuff. So, all right, Dr. Fred, so just 1 minute just to clear up any misconceptions you wanted the listeners to know, because they always tune in to the tail end of these interviews. What's the one thing you didn't get to that you want the listeners to know about you or your practice that we could share here in the last minute?
In the last minute, I'm going to talk about what everyone's been looking at when they walk into my office lately, are my new Vibram 5 fingers. It's completely crazy, but I love these new shoes. My wife and I both have them. We're loving to be able to move a little bit freer. We hate going back to regular shoes, even just throwing on some my wife threw on her Echoes, but she's walking better, and she has had chronic low back pain that we've been fighting with for years. I'll tell you what, if you've not tried a pair of these out, if you've not looked into this barefoot movement, check it out. If pretty exciting stuff. Just one of those cutting edge things that I'm onto that a lot of people like to check out afterwards. So just wanted to throw that out. Have fun with it.
No problem. And just give out your website so people can check you out on the web and just follow up on the interview here.
Absolutely. Main website for Upper Cervical Care, or Upper Cervical Health Center, is, well, UpperCervicalCare.com. Get you to the main information site, and then from there, if you go to Locate a Doc, search down to Illinois. I'm right there in the list, Fred Scherger, and just check out the site there. Come over to Facebook and become a fan. We'd love to have you, and we'll end it at that.
All right, man. Thanks for joining us here, and we'll get you back on when they push this thing through in the fall and see we're counting the Democrats, packing up their bags maybe in Washington. But until then, find them and fix them, man.
Another story. All right, thanks, Doc.
All right, man, take it easy. Take care. Good night. All right, so there's Dr. Fred. Let's see where he goes. So we're waiting for our next guest. We're going to take a little song break here and reboot, and we'll be back hopefully with Catherine Marion.
Talking to myself again, wondering if this traveling is good. Is there something better doing we'd be doing if we could? And oh, the stories we could tell. And if this all blows up and goes to hell, I can still see us sitting on the bed in some motel, listening to the stories we could tell.
You're doing good.
All right, so we are here on Soma Time, waiting for our friend to call in here from the West Coast. And while we are waiting for her to dial in, we will take a look at one of the other takes. We got lots of things going on here at once. Oh, wait, she's here. All right, so let's get her on the air here. We won't do that. Well, we'll weave it into the conversation. How about that? Oh, there you are. All right, well, let's introduce you here, Supergirl. joining us from somewhere in the wilds of Vancouver. I don't know, in the hills or the dales, but there are definitely hills in Vancouver, and Catherine Marion joining us here. Supernaturalwoman.com is the site, and we have only a half hour, but boy, we will squeeze every last drop of it with you here on Summertime. Thanks for joining us tonight in the skies.
Thank you. Can you hear me?
Of course. Yeah.
From the deepest valleys and the highest peaks, that's where I'm peeking forth from Dr. Mark. How are you?
No, I'm fine.
Good.
So
I just have to ask my son to turn down the laptop so I can hear myself.
Oh, yeah. Well, yeah. We have technology wafting all over the place here.
Oh,
I'm doing the same thing.
Trampling. Yes.
Now,
so
just for the uninitiated, for those of us east of the Rockies, why don't you give us a 25-word or less career introduction? Because this is not your average walking around human being we're listening to right now, folks. This is a band of people in running through one organism. So,
orgasmic organism.
Yes.
Mojo Radio Man on one of his on an interview recently, but it's on Supernatural Woman if you do a search, talked about me as a walking, talking illustration of sunshine on two legs. Well, there's one description. Basically, I'm a divine being having orgasmically organic experience on a conscious realm. And just totally excited about it, and thus it makes me kind of exciting, I suppose. I've never really been asked for a 25-word description, but good question.
Okay, well, just the guys, if you just want to get a beat on it here, I'm going to give you a couple of little, tail of the tape, so to speak, of our friend Catherine here. She just turned 50, the bank of January, right?
Yes, January 5th.
Okay, and you got a 13-year-old son of yours, right?
Yes, an Aries man in the making. And you got to grow your own nowadays.
Uh-huh. Yeah, well, there's a little shot across the bow. All right. We'll get into this gender war here in a minute.
Are you an Aries male?
No, I'm a Capricorn. Well,
oh, you're a happy Cappy. All right.
Some say happy. I don't know. The
yeah.
Capricorns get beat up on this end of the country for some reason. Richard Rowe, I'm on your list. Every time I get that Richard Rowe horoscope, I cringe because he always sentences me to another week of poverty. So anyway, I don't know why the Capricorns have so many haters. And you're also a raw food chef.
Absolutely. I've been eating all live raw and living that luscious lifestyle. I'm choking on some parsley. I just had a big salad for over eight years. You know when it's like you just turn back the wondrous wheels of time and you just don't look back anymore. So it's been over 8 years. I've literally stopped counting how many years I've been living this luscious, rawsome lifestyle, and my son as well.
Mm-hmm.
And that's before raw was really a trend. It was just common sense. And Victoria Butenko, I went to one of her workshops. She discovered my photography. I ended up photographing thirdeyephoto.com, her Eating Without Heating book, the back and all the front, the middle inserts for her children's, her terrific teen's first raw recipe book. And then I discovered literally my own missing link and just this absolute consciousness raising common sense to live this lifestyle about healing. All your show, I was listening to it, preventive medicine, taking proactive approach to your own health, healing and happiness. That's why I live a rawsome lifestyle.
Like I said, we are in the foothills of what is it going to be a mountainous discussion here of this woman's take on things, because we're trying to get the heal the healer here. Now, we talked about a little bit of Fred's hurt and his forays into Detroit and things like that. Because when you go through formal training to become a practitioner of the healing arts, you go into debt. There's no two ways about it. You go into unbelievable blinding debt because you have this cause in your heart. I want to help people. Now, some people don't get in with a pure attitude like that, but that's okay.
Mm-hmm.
Once you come out and you're actually in the world and you're actually offering, you put your shingle out there and you kind of wave your flag and you go, come on in for the healing, no matter what you're doing. Reiki, flaky, all the way up to brain surgery. No matter you have this contract with the world that you are going to be in this role of the caregiver. That's all formal and good, and there's burnout in it, and there's all kinds of stuff going on in it.
Yes.
And like I said a couple weeks ago on the show, 10% of the field is leaving. They're out of practice. They can't take it anymore. It costs too much to do this job. They're getting out.
Mm-hmm.
So that's sad that's happening when we're letting millions in. Now, you're up there in Canada watching this whole thing go by like a big flea circus, so it doesn't even sail with you. But the informal caregiving, because we're in an aging country, continent,
especially
really.
The baby boomers. Yeah.
The whole country's getting older. They're all breaking down. The average senior citizen is on 8 over-the-counter and prescription meds, and we don't have to take care of ourselves. And then you got a middle zone generation of kids that were basically all vaccinated, all drugged, and they're all starting to fall apart. And the ones behind them are on Ritalin and all kinds of other drugs. And then little babies are getting, you know, stuck with new vaccines, like 30 of them, I think, before the age of 3. So we're not living in a real health-oriented atmosphere. And then the care, I don't know about Canada, but in our system, is the third leading cause of death. So it really falls on you as an individual to find your own way, because you're going to be put at some point in your life in the role of the caregiver, whether it's through biological means with your kids or you're taking care of aging parents. Or basically, you know, trying to take care of a spouse or a friend or somebody else who's going through some stuff. So you, in your particular journey, which we wouldn't want to track with a GPS, we'd get dizzy, we would. You've kind of hit a chord with this notion of the supernatural woman. So why don't you give us an idea of what that is to you? What's that vision? And how do you see what your experience is going to be that you're going to be able to share with other people out there when they get put in the role of being the caregiver and they're not ready for it? They don't know if they have the inner strength to do it.
Well, that's a lot of questions in one, Mark. One of the websites is on
screen.
GreenTantra.com. I'm on there. I have a page mm-hmm. there. And the gal says, you know, what is a supernatural woman to you? Why don't you start a discussion? It's like, okay, just a better question for me. What is a supernatural woman? So that's quite a joyous journey. And like you said, there's some pitfalls and, trip lines along the way. So biologically, as a single, by choice and necessity, a mother of a homeschooling boy, happy homeschooler, thehappyhomeschooler.ning.com. You, I don't know if you check those pages. Okay, relax time. That's one thing. When I woke up today and opened up my secret pages, the secret. I haven't seen the movie, but I've been living it. And its first thing was about gratitude. You know, anytime we're not slowing down, about gratitude. Anytime we're not slowing down and we're getting tripped up and distracted and we're not, creating time for ourselves, is a lack of gratitude and a lack of enjoyment and all of the rest of it. So for me, what I do, I lay naked in the sun in the middle of, there you go, vitamin D and your doctor talking earlier.
Wow.
In the middle
naked
of January.
The
I'm not kidding. Yeah, it doesn't matter. I just open up my windows. Of course, I have old hardwood floors and I don't have big high rises out front of me to stare in at me. I have to charge. So I lay in the sun and let my freckles grow in January or whenever they may blow. And a lot of solitude, sanctuary, even for my son. He is an amazing boy because I allow him the space to create and to grow. And so we both do a lot of our own art because we're all artists in the making. We're genius untouched when we don't allow ourselves to, when we don't get tampered with. So... not even time. We talk about Soma space, so not chrono time, but Cairo time, island time, Vancouver Valley girl time, poetry.
Are there a lot of people in the rocks in Vancouver sunning themselves naked in January? I mean, this is Google Earth for a whole new meaning.
Well, actually, I'm at home doing this. I used to be on the top of an old penthouse I lived in doing it. And if you go to when you go to supernaturalwoman.com, you'll see me in my lingerie in the middle of January doing yoga. And God, I miss that spot with the swans and just Mother Earth touching me. So nature and
wow.
Silence. You know that. How
eco can you get? Okay.
What's that?
I said, how eco can you get? There's ecologic, and then there's this. Okay.
Ecologic is good.
Yeah.
Feeding ourselves good people, good thoughts, good feelings, and just positive affirmations, and living a positive affirmation, like not just going and running in busily into a yogic, a yoga class, but living a yogic lifestyle doesn't mean you can't have a naughty thought or have an unconscious moment and just being aware and allowing ourselves to be human and most importantly, humane and to have compassion, especially for ourselves and to be kind, womankind. That's what I consider Supernatural Woman to be, womankind. People can say non-judgmental, non-violent, but why even put all those things out there, the non? Just the affirmative, loving kindness, humanity, goodness, and just...
Well, there's a lot of the opposite going on. As you listen to the show, they're throwing bricks through the windows down here, because, of course, we passed the health care bill. So, I mean,
yeah.
and so with all that good stuff you're saying, and especially the sunning yourself naked on the rock in January thing...
Yeah.
All that, just minimize that, if we to use a word, to the lower part of the window here. The big picture is we're fighting like thieves out there. There's just a lot of oppression, a lot of ugliness in the world. And I'd love it if everybody ate raw food and everybody was spiritually aware and everybody was doing. But we're not. We're in a very inhumane, very very insensitive climate. So how do you juxtapose your inner world and all the things you're doing to manage yourself and to raise your kid? And how do you send your kid out to battle, so to speak, in the world here, knowing that the rest of the world, for the most part, is asleep, they're numb, and they're acting like basically a lot of caged animals that are coming out, and very feeling very cornered, feeling very very oppressed, not feeling into sharing and compassion these days. So
okay.
How do you reconcile those two things?
Keeping my son grounded and with a sense of who he is. And to trust in his instincts, because even though he's not out in the streets, he's street smart. And I raised my son, I protected him, that you could consider that an insular type of, a beingness, and also consider it isolated. I had the Minister of Children and Family take my son because they considered him to be too... they have all sorts of jargon, right, to make their money and launder their... It's all about dollars, nothing new. The government, God bless. So I keep my son grounded. I instill in him a sense of values, and the only way I can do that is not through the book, but by living life. and by being very honest and sharing with him. You know, there's discretions. We know certainly know there's indiscretions, but it's about not hiding or not being ashamed of who I am or what I've done or what I've thought or what's been done unto me, like the rapes when I was 18 and 19. I went public with that, City TV, a news broadcast, front page articles. It's on, you know, you do a Google on my site. And my son was part of that. He went to the National Parole Board hearing. He didn't go in with me. I just always have kept him so that he feels like he knows that he's a vital part of me, vitalization, your other doctor talked about. Mm-hmm. So no matter how oppressed, suppressed, and depressed that climate is out there and obviously within, it's all a mirror. So what I can do is I can share my misery with the world, and we all have some of that, or I can just pour it out in poetry like on my blog. And so with my son, I keep him grounded. I keep him happy, you know, who he essentially is, and self-confidence, an innate sense of self-esteem, knowing that he came here for a reason. And I've even apologized to my son where I've said, I'm so sorry the ministry took you. You were gone for 7 months and living in a gay foster home and coming back with 7 cavities and bruises and pinch marks. You know, I said I feel really responsible at times for that. When my vibration is low, Mark, when my vibration is low. So I keep my son's vibration high. And that's the only time we trip up or we're hit by 4 cars in a few years like me, or 8 abortions in 12 years, when I was a different person, when I was very affected and thus ineffective and infected by what was around me, and I let it taint me, rather than touchingly and tenderly going about my wondrous way. And I just started believing in magic again, my own, throughout the years, decades. And I just keep my son remembering who he is and why he's here. He's not here to please anyone. He's not here to save the world. He's not here to be another Gandhi or whatever else. He's not here to be shot at and die as a moving target, slings and arrows, because he's different, seemingly. Just to be a magnet, magnetizing our highest selves. Hopefully that's some kind of precious answer. Part of what asking.
It's definitely a response. I mean, I don't know where to start here.
Well, I'd rather have a response than a reaction.
Well, I'll compose myself then. there's a lot there because, you know, if you took a look at the latest edition of my newsletter, OVI, or Vital Interest, over on somaspace.org, mm-hmm. I have a little clip there on what's called the wounded healer, is an old concept, but it's something that got me started. I mean, I got into this line because like, I hit the throw with a hockey puck and it split my thyroid, ended up with a little cancer. I got that operated on. So, I was ripe old age of 21 or 2, whatever it was. So I understand what it's like when people come in and they're hurting. Mm-hmm. Because it's almost like the weird thing. I had a dentist when I was a kid, Dr. Sylvan. Oh, God, I hope he's gone. And this rat bastard had no cavities, ever. All right? Now, he had to pull 4 of my baby teeth when I was 12, that they wouldn't leave. They were stubborn to get ready for the braces, right?
Mm-hmm.
Now, he's in there with a chisel, and he's in there, ka-gunk, ka-gunk, and the thing, the root was so long, and I'm telling you, it was like a horror movie. And he's literally, I'm numb, I'm out of it, right? And he can't understand why I'm crying, it hurts. And he's like, what are you crying for, you baby? You know, this is Dr. Silva. This is like, God, 30-something years ago.
12 years ago. 12 years old.
Oh, I was 12. I was 12 years old.
You're a baby,
I'm getting beat up here. And I just remember feeling so sore after and so beat. I never forgot that feeling because he had no compassion at all because he never was in that position. And that's the thing. When you're working with someone who's gone through some pain, a loss or a violation or something happened with their kid, you completely and totally relate to that person's experience because you've had it firsthand. That's the path of the wounded healer. That's the contract you build with other people. That's why the roles are reversible.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and that's one of the things about the informal part of caregiving that I wish was talked about more because, you know, that's what people get on a surrogate level from a lot of the dopey talk shows that sort of make it dramatic and make it too, you know, a little bit too, to me, a little bit too saccharine, but.
Yeah, well said. You surrogate level, exactly.
Yeah, that's what it do. They watch those dopey shows and they get, you know, and there's a lot of reasons why that the media is good at that because they can manipulate your emotions. But when you're going through it yourself, there's no guide, there's no map, there's no how-to. And that's why, you know, if you can get into healing relationships with a practitioner or with anybody,
it becomes a resource for you when times call for it. And then you, like I said, having had several incarnations within this one, professionally, personally, relationship-wise, I mean, it's just you've done the gamut, and now here you are in the second half of your life, and you're raising this kid the way you want him to be raised. You've overcome a lot of the other obstacles here, and I'm just curious because, you know, some of the things that you blogged about recently and been talking about on your Facebook page, it has to do with and this is something that comes up a lot around the age of reason there, as some people would call it, when women and men going through their androgynous shift, when they go through the menopause and they go through the andropause and they're starting to get in touch with themselves as a whole person, as a spiritual being, you will be the last one over the fence because of the way you look, but on the outside, as far as getting to your masculine side. Mm-hmm. But what is it about the connection between a person's identity on a spiritual level, which could come from, you know, some experience they had or could come from some formal practices or whatever, and someone's identity on a sexual level, which is, as you were indoctrinated into the ugly, dark side of it, and how do you get to a point where you have a positive connection between your spiritual well-being and your sexual identity as you age, as you become less on the outside to the world standards of beauty, you know, the thing that everyone's going to be looking at the post office, so to speak, and as you age, that inner beauty becomes something that you can reflect out and not have to go by the same old outside-in standards that everybody else is using.
No, that's very phenomenal what you just said, because that's exactly what I've been working on, so very succinct. And so I would say aging gratefully, that's what I'm not working at. You know what I'm saying? I pretend I'm not working at it. Aging gratefully, graciously, and looking deep inside what my pluses are and seeing honest to God, Goddess, about how severely sexualized and exploited and all of the sexploited I have been, and also, you know, that I did play a part in that, of course, unwittingly at most, and that in this world, I've made a joke about it before many times about, you know, what do they want me to be, Mother Teresa with tits? Obviously, sex sells in this world. There's just no denying that. And the spiritual components, those aspects, it's so challenging, I find, on many levels to make money at that. Well, then I have to trust. I have to trust who I am, that I'm not here for anyone else's agenda. Someone asked me the other day, you know, what's your agenda today? I said, no, you sell big fancy cars. I said, I have nothing to sell. I have no agenda. That's you males. Sorry, I have my moments. So as I age gratefully, and it's about getting in touch and not giving a damn. And it's like, okay, so that means that I'm going to attract more of my higher self. I'm going to attract more, this is what I found to be, more males. It's like, okay, here I am 50. I thought by the time 50, people would be through talking about my tips and nipples or whatever else. Apparently not. So great. That means.
Well, you're talking about them. This is.
I'm sorry, but I'm going to accept them as gifts. So I'm going to play with them. So to speak, I'm going to write about them. I'm going to try and understand them. I'm not going to snip them off and put them up on a shelf and compartmentalize.
Well,
I'm going to
be
grateful.
That would be a whole other blog. But this is something, like I said, if you haven't gone over to supernaturalwoman.com, realize the depth of this person we're talking to here. We're not talking to someone who's a pinup girl and has a bubblehead and has nothing to say. She's been through almost like one of those Bruce Willis action movies, and she survived, you know, and she survived, and she survived like with the outer form of Jessica Rabbit, you know, which make, I'm not bad, I'm just drawn that way, that kind of thing.
And I thrived.
Yeah, you thrived, and the thing is that you basically beat them at their own game of exploiting you.
Mm-hmm.
And now you instead of coming back vindictive and bitter, which is what happens to a lot of people way before the age of 50, by the way. Is that you're coming out renewed, and it's funny. Some of your blogs, you're it's all about you working out in the gym, and that time you spend, you make for yourself. People don't do that. They always give up their turf, and their turf is their time to others. And that's the caregiver syndrome. That's the thing, the overcare, where they overextend themselves and they burn themselves out because they think that if they don't, they're not a good person. And you say, I'm going to the damn gym to take care of myself so I can put up with you people. And it's like, it's that amount of integrity that is rare, rare, rare. And it doesn't travel much below the southern border of Canada much, I tell you, you know, down here.
Because we don't reward it. We don't have any incentive to do it. And for the most part, people basically operate under the assumption that get them before they get me. That's one mindset. And the other one is people please until you drop. And you've struck a balance between those two that's probably the ethos of supernaturalwoman.com. So I guess to kind of wrap it up,
mm-hmm.
as you're watching this healthcare, so-called-unquote, debate go by down here, and you see what you've seen, both personally and through all the depths of your experiences, what's the number one thing we're missing about being a caregiver? And you've been a caregiver now for a long time, for yourself and for your kid and probably
and
for countless
mother.
Other people you've counseled and your parents, yeah.
yeah.
And countless other people you've counseled both as a healer and just as a friend.
Yeah.
What's missing from this equation that we could put in there that you can contribute to us as we venture forth into the abyss here?
You said it yourself earlier, basically. Empathy, compassion, and rather than a third party or some kind of delusional, turn on the knob, watch TV, live vicariously rather than empathically, and forget about sympathetically. That's always somebody below or above another. So having people being honest and sincere. I know that what happens with me, why I'm such a supernatural, you can call it, a healer, is because I'm very, very sincere with people, and I just hold their hand, or I can even look at them, or even my voice. And then it all bubbles and burbles out, all the pain, all the unrequited stuff. So just being open, and I can't expect people to heal if I'm not healing myself. I can't expect myself to grow and glow as a beautiful being if I don't accept responsibility for looking after me first and foremost, because I am useless to anyone else if I'm not loving myself. And there's a lot of definitions of love. It's not masturbating all day long. It's not going to shopping. I mean, that it would be all nice, of course. It's even not even sleeping sometimes, because you can have a wretched sleep with nightmares and all the rest of it. It's turning everything around and transforming, transmuting, and just going beyond and rising above it, and being able to give that gift to others just in your presence by being absolutely present, no matter if I'm going through the pitfalls of putrid pain. At least to be honest, and I'm feeling, even if I'm feeling like shit, at least I can feel, and to give that gift to others, allowing them to open up their locked door that nobody put them in the prison, really, essentially, except themselves, and to just open up the gate and gushes of gorgeous gratitude over it. How's that?
Well,
for a stream of dreamy, creamy consciousness.
you have absolutely, I mean, talking about Candy Mountain, you have absolutely gone through that. We should just replay that last 3 minutes as biofeedback for everybody the next couple of weeks. I'm on a different planet just following all those words. Well, thank
good.
You so much for joining us. And again,
you're
I,
wonderful.
I just
thank
got told,
you.
I misspelled your website there in the description. I'll make sure I go change that quick. It's Supernatural Woman, one woman, not women, woman.
Yeah, singular.
She's singular, all right. Thank God for that. We can't clone you yet, but we wish we could. So, thanks for
and my blog
spot,
let them know about that too.
Oh, well, if you go to that Wayne site, there's a link for her blog, which is when you can see her boobs and everything else and all the things she's trying
all
out.
Real.
Everything's real with this woman, believe me. If they tried to put anything fake on her, it would fall off. there's just no room for any more reality with you.
You're a funny fellow.
Well, some people say really funny, but you know what
I
mean?
You and Howard Stern.
Well, trust me, far from sure, but he does broadcast about 40 miles south of me here, but different
mm-hmm.
audience, I think.
Well, you're going about 80 miles an hour, Mark, so you're okay.
Well, I'm going to go to a grinding stop here in a minute, but thanks for joining us tonight. Again,
my
anyone
pleasure.
That wants to get a hold of her, I really encourage you. She's got a lot of things to share. And she's just genuinely just a really nice, sweet person. I root for you and people like you that have to go out there and sort of, scurry through the world with a lot of these obstacles. But you have an unbelievable ability to find the course with the obstacles. So I wish you luck out there. Thanks for joining us tonight on Somatime.
Thank you very much. Many blessings and bliss. Thanks.
Travel light, Canadian.
Absolutely.
Right.
Holding on only to love.
Uh-huh.
Thank you, Mark.
Well, hold on. All right. Bye-bye.
Sweet dreams. Bye.
Uh-huh. All right, there you go. I can't even put words to the music here tonight, folks. Let's see. I have to Well, there's one thing I did want to get to before we parted, because we're going to be off the stream here in a minute, so if you're listening to the archive, you'll hear most of this, but I'll just give out the I started talking about it, is a lot of the tools on healthcare, because of the fact that they're going to outlaw them on the ground, are going to go to the sky. And the blog is called readwriteweb.com, and just Google in healthcare reform is a cloud. That's the article. And the gist of it is, as we probably wind off the stream here in a second, is that a lot of the tools for the healthcare 2.0 are in place, and there's a lot of business things about it that I won't get into here, but the article basically says health devices are one of the favorite things on the internet, blood pressure monitors, things like that. Okay, the more you look into this stuff, there's a lot of proactive things that are going to be coming out that would be like an Amazon of these healthcare tools that you don't need a doctor for, you don't need permission for. They're just there. And it's sad that, you know, that part of it isn't being talked about enough. I love this little bull face they have towards the end of the article. We're convinced people eat, sleep, pirouette, and take pills. And it says, innovations for healthcare are already springing out on the web and will thrive on their own merits. So the job of healthcare reform technology should be to instigate this innovation as soon as possible, or in the medical term, stat. What would you do if offered a fixed bid contract for $1 billion to annually build a new health cloud for America? Would you bring it along to get the work done? This is where it's going. I've got my Doctor on Demand program available there on summerspace.org. In 30 days, I will retrain your brain, get you out of this muck forever, and free you to not rely on this system that will abuse and lose you. And if you don't have the requisite variety that our friend Catherine has, you might be, in a different situation. So we're going to leave it there for tonight. Heal the Healer. Again, check out my my last entry over there on OVI newsletter. I'm yawning. And it does describe the wounded healer, which, like I said, if you find one, stay with them, because they'll understand you and they will ride the wave with you out there, because it's very, very difficult. And in the way we're dealing with things, with all these guys getting out of the field, we're going to have to learn to take care of ourselves better. There's going to be a moratorium on that, on first-person authority and being able to be responsible for your health and your well-being as we go forward. Now, I don't know. I don't know what comes next, but I know that for right now, you know, you guys can take your bow for getting this thing passed, thinking that it's helping anybody. I really think that we've created a little bit of a little dead end for ourselves. So hopefully, like I said, between Fred, me, and people like Catherine out there, we'll keep you guys swimming. All right, so we're going to put it in the shed here for another week, and we'll be back next week as we begin April. April, the cruelest month. And I didn't get to it, damn it. Where is this kid? Yeah, I wanted to get this story out there. Did you guys hear about this? The autistic teen has perfect NCAA bracket, okay? Now, his secret is that he loves numbers, kind of a Rain Man kind of thing. He's good at math, all right? This is a, how old is this kid? I'll tell you how old he is. He's a teenager, that's all it says. Anyway, the odds of doing this are astronomical, all right? So, yeah, this kid is he's picking games. It's not just picking the favorites here. This is an amazing record he's done. And he's got the Sweet 16. And you go to richardgardner.com is where his site is. It's a charity site over there. It's a contest. And there's an Autism Speaks is having a contest for him now. But amazing. It's $150 million to one shot that he's gotten to all these games right to get to the Sweet 16 with a perfect bracket. So next week we're going to try and get somebody on about the bracketology, the guys that wrote that book and that we talked about last week's show. And we'll have another visit from Pagan Professor Val about Easter. Get into a little chocolate controversy maybe with her. And who knows what else. We're going to figure it out. But until then, I just wanted to get that across there at the end of the night. I didn't even get to my spring smarts. We'll do them next week. There's a lot to learn. Go over to OVI. On somerspace.org and read the OVI this week on the Wounded Healer. I am absolutely drunk with stress. I will leave it to Bruce to get me out of this. Please, Bruce, save me somebody. And we'll see you next week. Let's see. And eventually. again, foiled by Napster. All right, I want to thank our guests, Dr. Fred Sugar, our friend Tom, and of course, SupernaturalWoman.com's Catherine Marion. Great show, guys, and we'll see you again here next week on Summertime. Forever light through the darkness. Be yourself and be well. Sapiens.